past 4 o'clock. It's been almost 4 weeks since the oil rig explosion caused the large slick in the Gulf of Mexico. 11 people were killed by the explosion that day. And now one of the survivors is speaking publicly for the first time. Mike Williams appeared on the TV program 60 Minutes last night. He says BP was trying to speed up drilling just before the disaster and that the resulting oil spill could be the worst in U.S. history. Here's some more of what Mike Williams had to say last night on TV.
Hey, let's bump it up. Let's bump it up. And what he was talking about there is he's bumping up the rate of penetration, how fast the drill bit is going down. We were informed of this during one of the safety meetings that somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 million was lost in bottom hole assembly and mud. And you always kind of knew that in the back of your mind when they start throwing these big numbers around that there was going to be a push coming. You know, a push to pick up production, pick up the pace. They discovered chunks of rubber in the drilling fluid. He thought it was important enough to gather this double handful of chunks of rubber and bring them into the driller shack. I recall asking the supervisor if this was out of the ordinary. He said, "Oh, it's no big deal." And I thought, how can it be not a big deal? There's chunks of our seal is now missing. I had the BP company man sitting directly beside me, and he literally perked up and said, "Well, my process is different, and I think we're going to do it this way." And they kind of lined out the way he thought it should go that day. So there was sort of a chest bumping kind of deal. The communication seemed to really break down as to who was ultimately in charge.
Mike Williams, electronics technician for BP, one of the survivors of the explosion that sunk the oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico. You've heard so much about the spill. You don't hear an awful lot that 11 people were actually killed that day. Well, after many setbacks, BP says one of its attempts to help stem the flow of oil from that well in the Gulf is working, as you've heard in the news. The company's senior executive, Vice President Kent Wells, says that they have inserted this tube to draw some of the gushing oil to a ship that's on the surface. Kent Wells says eventually they hope to stop the flow altogether.
We've inserted the tool again this morning. It's working as planned, and we're very slowly increasing the rate that's coming from the riser tool up to the surface. So we do have oil and gas coming to the ship now. We do have a flare producing or burning off the gas, and we have the oil that's coming to the ship going through our surge tank. We will be looking to optimize this over the next couple days to try to produce as much of the oil and gas as we can from this, and we will just learn as we go in this approach. Now let's talk about what are we doing to ultimately kill the well. Now I think understanding this part is important. The whole process of the top kill is to put heavy kill mud into the wellbore so that it reduces all the pressure and reduces the flow from the well. That's our primary objective. The whole purpose is to get the kill mud into the well and shut it down. Once we do that, we'll ultimately follow it with cement and entomb the well. Our anticipation is that it'll be another 7 to 10 days to complete all of the preparations that we need to exercise this option. And then at that point, we'll pump the kill mud and hopefully have this well killed and the well shut off and the flow shut off.
BP Vice President Kent Wells, no matter how much oil can be brought to the surface of the Gulf of Mexico through this newly installed tube, though, millions of liters are already in the Gulf. You've probably heard about the tar balls. They've been washing up on the beaches in several U.S. states. And researchers saying they're seeing more underwater plumes of oil than they can count. Well, to talk more about this, someone who's watching it closely is Paul Glover, professor of petrophysics at Laval University. Hello, professor.
Hello, Jackie. Nice to be back.
You as well, to have you on the program. We talked to you right after Haiti because you were focused on the earthquake and the many that occurred after that. But now this. How have you been watching it over the past 4 weeks?
Well, clearly we've been tracking it and seeing what's going on. There's been a lot of A lot of uncertainty about the amount of oil that's coming out, first of all, and then, you know, where it's going, as we've recently heard. And something, as you said just a moment ago, that was got lost along the line is that 11 people died in the original explosion, and it's something we haven't heard very much about. So, you know, it's clearly a tragedy, and the tragedy is mainly for those 11 people. But then, actually, after that, then you have to start thinking about the environment. And at the moment, there are some positive signs and maybe some negative signs as well. And it's very difficult to judge exactly where we'll be at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the focus is on the people right now with the likes of Mike Williams, you know, a real face that was out there that was being told, you know, push it.
Yes, it's very difficult when you hear Mike Williams speak to know exactly how it all fits in. I think only in the fullness of time will we realize exactly what caused the problem. It took years to find out what happened on the Piper Alpha platform in the northern North Sea in England some while ago. It took a very long time to find out exactly what went wrong, and I suspect it will take a while to find out exactly what went wrong this time.
Yeah, and what caught my attention over the weekend are researchers saying they're seeing more underwater plumes of oil than they can count. Like, what would they look like under there?
Like underwater clouds, a little bit, you know. So if you fly through the air, say on your way to Europe, you might fly through some clouds. But if you were flying through the water, you might actually go from water into a plume of oil and then back out again. But what's been a surprise is that, you know, you normally expect oil to come to the surface because it's less dense than water. But in this particular case, and probably for the first time, we're seeing these quite large plumes of oil, and the thought is that it might be associated with the use of dispersants right down at depth before the oil gets to the surface. Because normally, you spray dispersants onto the oil that gets to the surface, but in this particular case, we've been actually putting dispersants down to try and get at the oil as quickly as possible, and the result of that may be that we've actually created plumes of oil which have a similar sort of density to water, and so never make it to the surface.
Okay, so on the positive side, by the time it reaches shore, it might have broken down, but there's obviously a negative side here too.
Well, you know, it could go either way. There was a huge blowout in the 70s in the Gulf of Mexico, and that actually spilled almost half a million tons of oil, and that compares with about 20,000 tons that have so far come out of the deepwater horizon. So a lot more, but because the weather was bad and it broke the oil up, and the oil took a couple of months to come to shore, then the bacteria managed to break down an awful lot, and we've had specialists who were involved in the cleanup of that saying it only took a few months for the wildlife to rebound. But those shores weren't very sensitive to oil spills. They were, you know, big sandy beaches, whereas here we have ecosystems which are much more sensitive, and the question is, of course, whether or not even the action of those microbes on the oil eating them at depth might actually take the oxygen out of the water and create zones of the ocean which are effectively not capable of supporting life because
dead zones, yeah,
deoxygenated.
Yeah, we're speaking with Paul Glover, professor of petrophysics at Laval University. I'm just wondering, are you and your students looking at this long tube that's been lowered into the pipe that's spewing oil? Is this something that comes up in the classroom?
Well, I think it would have done, but of course the classes are finished now.
Oh, of course
it
is.
My students are probably looking at tequilas on a beach somewhere.
Oh, good. Well, I hope it's a clean beach and not an oily beach. But talk more about the tube. What do you think of it?
It's the third or fourth option that they've tried. We must say here, actually, that when it comes down to trying to do something like this, it is tremendously complicated technologically. And BP are probably one of the very, very few people who could actually even try it. You know, we have BP and Shell, perhaps, and maybe Exxon. these companies have more technological know-how, more financial backing than many, many countries. They're in a very, very good position to try things. But even having said that, at 6,000 feet of depth in very cold water, very, very high pressures, then it's a tremendously difficult thing to do, because those are the perfect conditions to create a mixture of ice and gas that forms crystals and blocks everything up. So you have an awful lot of technological problems to overcome to get the pipe in. As I was saying to somebody earlier today, just to get the pipe down and inside, and we're talking about a 4-inch pipe that goes into the broken 16-inch pipe that's down there, required 8 unmanned robots just to push the pipe backwards and forwards and keep it in exactly the right place. So you're talking about trying to thread a needle, really, but not trying to do it with your hands, but to try to do it remotely with 8 robots instead. And so it's very, very, very difficult thing to do. And the fact that they've managed to do it so well so far, and we're keeping our fingers crossed, is actually is remarkable, and they ought to be, BP ought to be really congratulated. In fact, they ought to be congratulated for their whole attitude towards this, because they've had an attitude more of a kindly guardian towards the environment than a commercial company, and they seem to be trying to do all they possibly can.
And you'll keep on watching, Paul Glover.
Oh, indeed, I will. Yes.
And how does that work for you? Is it at the internet, or do you actually make connections with people down there?
I have some connections, and I have the internet, and of course, I know where to go to find out the information that I need as well. But certainly, this is a very, very important thing to get finished. We, as I said earlier, we have had about 20,000 tons of oil spilled so far. The other one that happened in the Gulf of Mexico was 461,000 tons, and that spilled for 9 months. And we just have to keep our fingers crossed that this thing can be capped much, much sooner than that. But you know, they have two drilling ships drilling the relief wells at the moment. The first one started on the 2nd of May. The second one started a few days ago. And so there's a lot of parallel effort being put into place here, not just for capping the leaks, but also for relieving the well, for killing the well, that is, stopping it completely and cementing it up in the end, and also all the relief for the ecosystems and the cleanup that's going around. 500 vessels have been put on that. I heard that BP had employed over 13,000 people on the job the other day. So it's clear that they're taking it very, very seriously indeed, and it should be taken that seriously, because it's quite a serious problem.
Paul Glover, I hope we can call on you again. Thank